This podcast is brought to you in partnership with Speak Studios and Speak Boise. Speak Boise is a community-driven studio space where voices from all walks of life can speak and be heard. You can find them on Instagram and Facebook at Speak Studios, Speak Boise, and at their website, speakstudios.com. Speak Studios. Speak and be heard. This podcast is also brought to you by Instant Imprints. Promote better with Instant Imprints. Instant Imprints are Boise's visual communications experts and your place for everything you need to promote your business, club, school, or group. As a locally owned business, Instant Imprints specializes in making your organization more visible with custom branded apparel, embroidery, promotional items, print services, and wide format printing for signs, as well as banners and vehicle graphics. Want better ways to get noticed? You better visit Instant Imprints at instantimprints.com/Boise or call 208-IMPRINT. That is 208-467-7468.
Hi.
Hi, Erin.
So you're eating for the first time today at 3 p.m.
I am.
And you're having pickle chips.
Oh, dilly, snap. Dilly bites again.
Dilly bites again.
I had that win. The first one? Or
yeah. Maui onion. Oh, God. I hate that. And then a giant Coke.
Okay,
so Dr. Pepper.
I call it dark and stormy suicide.
Oh.
Because it's all the diet drinks that the gas station has. All the dark diet drinks the gas station have. So like Diet Coke, Diet Dr. Pepper, Diet Pepsi.
You mesmerize me.
I love diet soda.
I guess.
I really love diet soda.
I had one of those little mini cans of Coke today. So
they're good, but like a diet, like you said this weekend, a Coke Zero makes me feel like a Hollywood starlet.
Yeah, it does. You know what I like is Black Cherry Coke.
Black Cherry Coke Zero is the shit.
I don't really like cherries in general, like when it's like cherry pie or cherries, okay. Cherries. But when it's in a drink form,
it's so good.
Especially
it's a
like a
kind of cherry. It's not. It's like an amaretto cherry. It's not like a.
Yeah, it's not like a. Yeah, and Virgil's Black Cherry Cream Soda is the business.
I like a Black Cherry Cream Soda.
Yes, I like any cream soda, but Black Cherry especially just hits different, as the kids
really
say.
Into like a soda shop. I mean, I love a handcrafted soda.
Don't get me wrong.
But like a cream soda, I'm like, who the fuck puts cream in their soda? This is not coffee. Sorry, Grandma.
Sorry. Okay, so I have two things that I want to briefly discuss because we got to like whip through this
thing. Well, let's just hit through what did you watch?
Okay, what did I watch? We've watched so many Marvel movies, I feel like, since we last spoke. So I think I left off with we were about to watch Thor. So we watched Thor. We watched the first Avengers movie, which we saw not that long ago, but it was more enjoyable to watch again now that I know, like, oh, here are some more backstories.
The history.
Mm-hmm. And then we watched Thor, A Dark World. And then we watched, which I was kind of like, meh. And Iron Man 3, which was awesome.
I forgot there was an Iron Man.
Yeah. And so next one. Yeah,
what's his name?
Guy Pearce is the bad guy.
Guy Pearce is the bad guy?
Yeah, which is excellent.
I thought, not Rodney Dangerfield. Who's the wrestler guy who was...
Mickey Rourke?
Yeah, wasn't he in the second one?
Yes, he's in the second one.
Okay, I got to mix up. Because they were in like Monte Cristo.
The Formula One racing or something like that. Yeah, so Guy Pearce is the bad guy in the third one, which is excellent because Guy Pearce is amazing. You know Guy Pearce from Memento. That's probably his most well-known role, I would say. And then, so the next Marvel movie is...
Eat a chip, I'm sorry.
Oh my gosh. The next movie is Captain America Winter Soldier. So I'm excited. And a couple of episodes ago, I said, I have a feeling that I'm going to get like hooked.
She's hooked.
I'm hooked.
On the franchise.
The best Avenger is the Hulk. I don't know that there's any sort of comparison, but that is.
That's a weird choice.
No.
I think you'll like him by Endgame. You'll really like him.
The Hulk?
Mm-hmm.
He's my favorite.
Thor Ragnarok, you'll really like. You'll love Thor Ragnarok. I think that will be one of your favorites.
You think so?
Mm-hmm.
I doubt it.
That one or Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, I've already seen those and I love those.
Yeah, so then you'll love Thor Ragnarok.
Okay.
You'll okay. love it.
Good, good, good. So that was just to update you. That's where I was. And also, I feel like I'm going to save this question for next episode when we have more time, okay?
Christ, okay.
Okay.
Are you going to remember it?
Yeah, I am. Okay. I am. So today we're talking about...
Oh, you're not going to ask me. That's okay. Today we're going to talk about...
What? Ask you what?
What I'm watching, Rude.
Oh, sorry. A couple episodes ago, you said... The next few episodes will be about me, so I guess you're taking that back. So Whoa. Just kidding. What are you watching?
I want to get the right name. I watched this weekend with God. My roommate Zach. And his brother Kyle. Uh-huh. We watched. I think this will surprise you because I loved it.
You loved it?
Yeah.
What is it?
Barb and Star go to Vista Del Mar.
Did you like?
It was so. I don't know. There's something about. SNL girl, SNL women.
Yep.
I was going to call them girls. That's disrespectful. My apologies. SNL. SNL women have this.
S&M women.
SNL women have this ability, especially when it was like the 90s, early 2000s. I'm talking about like Tina Fey. I'm talking about Kristen Wiig, Amy Poehler.
Maya Rudolph.
Those, they create these female characters that are all like either from like specific weird regions in the United States and they just dive deep into them. And so, but they all can do it. And most of them can do these like Midwestern.
Oh, you bet.
White women with you pants bet. Up to their titties. And they're yes. like, hi Barb. Hi Star. And it was just it was just bizarre.
I love it.
The movie is so fucking weird. It reminded me of like, you know what? I want sequels because I want a full revival of the Austin Power, Mike Myers, like, but I want a female version of like this, like, ooh. And that's what it reminded me of. It reminded me, it wasn't as raunchy or as like, it was raunchy, but it was like a female raunch is so much better. Like, it always has a touch of class. There's always like an apostrophe on the E or something.
I love it.
And so it was just like, it was raunchy, but it still was like this, like, I could watch it with, well, I can watch anything with my mother, to be honest, but I could watch it with my grandmother.
Trisha's down.
She's down.
But grandma would watch it with you?
Maybe. I wouldn't feel so icky if she did.
What's grandma's name?
Judy.
Judy would watch it.
Judy would watch it. I know she probably wouldn't, but I just like, I could watch it with someone's grandma and not feel overtly offended. Okay.
I see what you're saying.
Something like Austin Powers, like, no, you could not watch it with grandma.
I get like nervous, not nervous, but I always like, I would watch Austin Powers with my dad and get like so embarrassed because it's just so painfully, I mean, I love it for what it is, right? Yeah. And I love Mike Myers, but well, interesting. Okay, yeah. I'm glad you liked it though. It was really,
yeah.
Did Zach funny. Like it?
Yeah, Zach loves it. Yeah. But Zach loves comedies.
And Zach loves women.
He loves, yes. We're gonna have to bring him on for an episode.
We will.
A movie he's really passionate about.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. Okay.
Okay. Now we can continue.
now that's over. I'm just kidding. You're not
rude ass. Sorry, grandma. But your granddaughter is rude. Sorry. No home training.
Sorry, Elaine. Home training. Oh my God. Yeah, absolutely not.
Well, that's a perfect segue for this movie.
That is a perfect segue. So today we are talking about The Help. Colin has lots of feelings. I have lots of feelings.
I'm a void. I have no feelings about this movie.
Oh, no. That's like, not true. You do.
I wish I had no feelings about this movie.
But you don't. You have lots, I feel. So before we get into the feels, let's talk about the basics of the film. The film was from 2011. So 10 years ago, it came out. Feels
Christ.
Feels more recent because of reasons we will discuss later. So we are starring Viola Davis, Octavia Spencer, Emma Stone, Allison Janney, Bryce Dallas Howard, and Jessica Chastain. Very female cast.
You also have Sissy Spacek.
Oh, yes. As the Bryce Dallas Howard's mom.
Yes. And then there's like a plethora of other female actresses and actors who like... We're just in there for a glimpse, but like you look at back now and I was like, holy crap, she was in this movie?
Yes, yeah. And Cicely Tyson.
Yes.
That plays Constantine.
Yes,
yeah.
Another one.
So, you know, lots of phenomenal actors and actresses in this film. And I think that's partially what makes what we'll talk about later more frustrating, right? So, so we are, this film is directed by Tate Taylor. We know Tate Taylor from directing films like Pretty Ugly People, Get On Up, the James Brown film that was not good. Did you like it?
I did.
It was bad. It was a bad movie.
I really liked it.
Like, no hate to Chadwick Boseman. Love, love, love. But
I thought it was amazing.
The girl on the train, which I fucking hated because it did the book like such a disservice to the point where I will never watch that movie again.
I love that movie.
It was a crap movie compared to the book. I will die on that hill.
Do you like Gone Girl, though?
Yes.
Interesting. Okay.
That's a David Fincher movie, though. And I've never met a David Fincher movie I didn't like. He directed the movie Ma, also with Octavia Spencer in it.
I love that movie.
Of course you do. And most recently, there's a film called Breaking News in Yuba City, and that's their most recent.
Didn't he also do Romy and Michelle?
I don't know.
I think he did Romy and Michelle.
He's kind of young, though, I thought. I think. Maybe not. Anyway, but he wrote the screenplay as well, and it's based on the novel by Catherine Stockett. IMDb rating, would you like to guess?
Oh, it's high.
Yeah, it is. How
like
high?
Like 80 something.
It's 8. Yeah, 8 out of 10 on IMDb.
Oh, Rotten Tomatoes.
And then Rotten Tomatoes is a 76% tomato meter and an 89% audience score.
Totally understandable.
Which is not at all surprising to us.
No. Questionable, but not
Questionable, but not surprising, right? Yeah. Let's dive right into the women, because there's a lot.
Well, I think before... Since we're probably not going to talk about the director because he's a man. Gross.
Yeah, gross bye.
But I think we should talk about the author a little bit.
Okay.
Because I
started up.
Yeah. So Catherine Stockett, correct?
Yep.
Okay. I'm kind of high on Coke right now. Catherine Stockett.
Like Coca-Cola, not cocaine.
Correction.
Or is it?
Dun, dun, dun. So Catherine Stockett wrote the book in 2009.
Yep.
Her first novel. And yep. Really seems like the only one. I haven't seen anything new from her. And reading up on it, because I think it's really important that we talk about some of the pitfalls of the book because it's so heavily inspired.
Yeah, do it.
So she wrote the book kind of about her. Now, she says it's not an autobiography because she's actually too young to even be.
Right.
Yeah, because she was only 41 when the book came out. But it's very inspired by her life. She grew up in Jackson, Mississippi.
Okay.
The woman who she's kind of inspired by is her own maid.
Mm-hmm. That
raised her for, was in part of her family's life for 30, almost the majority of her life.
Yeah.
And so what really kind of triggered her was the passing of her maid. Mm-hmm. Because she realized, like, you know what I mean? This was a woman who raised me, who inspired me, who loved me. And then when it came to her funeral, that was the first time she saw her out of her maid's costume. So never knew kind of who she was. And so really she started writing this book, The Help, as kind of a love letter, inspiration of, like, you know, what would it look like? What was her life like?
Yeah.
And so placed it in the time of the movie, which is 1960s,
mm-hmm.
kind of height of the civil rights movement, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Jackson, Mississippi.
Yeah.
In this kind of picturesque suburbia.
Yes, right.
Very southern suburbia.
Yes, suburbia.
Kind of, I guess, a quick synopsis of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
You have Skeeter, mm-hmm. who's this young, fresh graduate from Ole Miss, Mississippi State,
mm-hmm.
if you're nasty. And she
if you're nasty.
So she returns home and kind of has to reintegrate back into her southern society. So her mother is suffering from cancer, but she's like the Daughters of the Confederacy, Daughters of America Club.
She lives on a cotton farm.
She lives on a big old traditional plantation.
Yep.
All her high school friends, all her girlfriends are married and having babies now. And they all have, you know what I mean, affluent husbands.
Yep.
I think it's really important that we're talking about suburbia.
Yeah.
And we would almost venture like upper, not like.
Oh, we're kissing upper middle class.
Yeah, we're
for
almost
sure.
There.
We're almost to the wealthy status.
Yeah, because they're talking to lieutenant of the state. She has direct links to the Surgeon General and the governor.
Galas and benefits. All that stuff.
And so she's kind of integrating back into society, this well-to-do debutante kind of society.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just this quick notice of like you get this sensation that everyone's different. And she gets hired at the local newspaper. She's writing kind of cleaning articles, like Miss Mama.
A housekeeping column.
Housekeeping column.
Yeah.
And so she asked one of her friends if she could talk to her black maid,
mm-hmm.
and kind of get cleaning tips.
Yeah.
The thing that really kicks off the movie is a bathroom.
Yes.
The bathroom. So
the
as
bathroom.
We know, this is Jim Crow segregation.
Yep.
And blacks were not allowed, traditionally, we're not supposed to use the same restrooms.
Right.
And so they were starting to build and incorporate these kind of outhouses.
Yeah, like a shack.
Right? You know, same.
Call a spade a spade. It's a shack.
It's the same siding. So it's not a shack.
Oh, it separate but equal. It increases blah,
the
blah.
Value of the home. It's not a shack.
Christ.
And so, I mean, we're talking about Mississippi in the summer.
Yeah.
Over 100, taking a shitter, excuse me, grandma, in an outhouse.
Yeah. Sorry, Judy. Sorry, Elaine.
Yes. And so they're trying to just, you know, I mean, conceptualize, understand, like, sell her friends, like Hilly,
yeah.
The main kind of bitch of the movie.
Oh, she's a bitch.
Is trying to sell her friends, like, you need to buy this because this would be great. And she's using her kind of debutante club to, like, promote this sanitation bill.
Yes.
And do all these charitable words, air quotes.
Yeah.
And so Skeeter, which we'll talk about, because decides, like, you know, this is not cool. This is not right. And as a writer, you know, she's kind of pressed by this New York editor to, like, write about something you care about.
Yeah,
and
so, be authentic, yes, right? Yeah.
And so she starts interviewing these maids in the neighborhood, or her friend's maids. Two of the main characters would be Abilene, who's played by Viola Davis. And then we have Minnie, who is played by Octavia Spencer. Mm. And so she starts interviewing them. And, you know, there's tension. Of course, these women are like, no,
I don't trust you.
Yeah, I'm not going to trust you.
Right.
But different events inspire them to not only for them to interview, but also 30-something maids.
Yeah.
Give their testimony and their story about their treatment and their history.
Right.
Some other notable characters, Sissy Spacek, as we said, plays Hilly, who's kind of the villain. She plays her mother.
Yes.
We have Jessica Chastain, who plays
Celia Foote,
who is this kind of country bumpkin who marries one of the good old boys, and everyone in town is kind of jealous or, you know, mean to her, and she befriends.
She's very beautiful. Yes.
Very Marilyn busty.
Busty, blonde, happy, giggly.
A little ditzy,
but overall...
Pleasant.
Yes.
Minnie, who is Octavia Spencer character, is originally Hilly's maid.
Hilly Holbrook, yeah.
And then is fired for reasons and things happen. Yep. And then she is hired by Jessica Chastain's character. What's her name again?
Celia Foote.
That's a stupid name. Celia Foote. Abilene, who is Viola Davis, is... I can't remember the character's name.
Oh, it's like...
I have it.
Amanda or something like that.
Amanda.
I don't know. It's some...
We shouldn't tell lies.
Yeah, but she's... We see her kind of first, right?
Yeah, I can't remember her name, but she plays one of the...
Yeah, one of the debutantes.
Skeeter's friend.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then Skeeter's mom...
Allison Janney.
I think her name was Charlotte?
Yep, Charlotte.
She is kind of like living through her daughter. There's some good mother-daughter moments.
Yeah.
One controversial moment is the maid, their maid, Skeeter's maid,
Constantine,
who's played by Cicely Tyson, is gone. And so Skeeter is really just pestering her mother, like, why did you fire her?
Where is she at? Where is she gone? Yeah.
Why is her mother's like, you need a man? Favorite line in the movie. oh gosh, what did she say?
I love Allison Janney.
She's so good. She's really good in this movie.
She's so good in everything.
She said, love and hate are two horns on the same goat, and you need a goat. I almost fell out my chair.
Well, because at one point, so the difference between, like, Skeeter and these other debutante women, other than the fact that Skeeter sees more to life than just finding a wealthy husband and popping out babies, she goes to college. She's not as, pretty, I guess, as these other women. She doesn't care as much about her looks. Like,
she should.
And that's depicted in the film, right? They don't make her to, like...
She's frizzy hair.
Look prim and proper and everything. So a scene in the movie is when she finally gets these curlers that kind of maintain her frizzy hair, and her mom's, like, so happy about it. But anyway, she has this boyfriend who is fucking hot, by the way. I think his name's Stuart or something. Mm-hmm. And so they're, like, you know, they kind of piss each other off at the beginning, and then he's like, oh, this is kind of a cool chick. And then we realize... Stuart's not down. Stuart is not in any way a progressive person. And he's basically like, leave this alone. Like, leave this issue alone. This is the South. This is the way it is. And she's like, I can't, you know, deal with that. So they break up. Right. Yeah. Something interesting about the book is that before the book was even published, the movie rights were sold.
Oh, yeah.
This was on track to be a quote-unquote hit film.
Yeah. Before, I think once it finally got picked up.
Yes.
Because it was denied a couple times.
It was.
Someone in their mother was like, well, we're going to make a lot of money off this
book. Oh, absolutely. And the book.
And it was a very popular book.
Oh, it was.
5 million copies sold. I didn't even hear about the book until like the second or third time I watched. I've watched this movie quite a few times. Not because I liked it. Okay, the first one or three times. You know, like recent times, it's because I hate it.
Well, and the book was on the New York Times bestseller list for 100 weeks.
Yeah.
That's a long time. That's a long time.
Yeah, it's a long time. So, 5 million copies sold. That's no joke. That's like that's Dan no Brown joke. Level.
Yeah, that's like Da Vinci Code level.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, we're dealing with something that is mega popular, right? 10 years ago when this came out.
Yeah.
But, and we'll get to the controversy a little bit later after we talk about the women. Shall we dive right in?
Yeah.
To the women?
Start with?
I will. We got to start with Viola Davis.
Oh, interesting choice.
So Viola Davis plays Abilene Clark. We know Viola Davis from Fences, Doubt, Troop Zero, How to Get Away with Murder, the television show. And then most recently, Suicide Squad. And she is also set to play Michelle Obama in the TV series, The First Lady.
That's going to be interesting.
I'm excited about that. I'm excited about that. Really thinking that that's probably a really great person to play Michelle Obama.
Yeah.
There's just such a class about her, both women, that I think will be seen really well. I hope. That's kind of my,
yeah,
that's kind of what I think.
I think she's gonna do it
justice. And then we have Octavia Spencer, who plays Minnie Jackson. We know her from Ma, which you liked.
I did.
Hidden Figures, of course. Fruitvale Station. And most recently, she's in a film called Thunder Force.
Which looks hilarious.
It looks really funny, which I love seeing her in these kind of roles because, like, in Hidden Figures, for example, like, no, it's not a comedy, but there's such, like, these cheeky comments that she makes. And
well, and the same thing with this movie. She's, like,
I think
she's, like, very understated. She's a comedic genius, and I don't think... But she's not the type who's going to be like Melissa
McCarthy,
who's rolling around on the floor. You know
right.
I mean? She has a zinger.
She's not a physically comedic actress. No,
but she, oh my gosh, you have to watch Ma.
Smart comedy.
You have to watch Ma.
Okay.
She's so damn good in that movie. We should do that movie, actually.
Okay. And then we have your favorite actress, Emma Stone, who plays Skeeter. And we know her from La La Land, Easy A, Birdman, The Favorite, and most recently Cruella, which we have disagreed on already. Allison Janney plays Charlotte, which is Skeeter's mom. And we know her from Juno, 10 Things I Hate About You, I, Tonya. And most recently, she's in Breaking News in Yuba City, which is also directed by the same person, Tate Taylor. Bryce Dallas Howard, who is the daughter of Ron Howard, right?
Oh, God.
Did you not know?
Nope.
First Newman's Own. Now this. Where does it stop with you?
It never does.
I hope it never does. Plays Hilly Holbrook, which is the perfect name for a perfectly terrible bitch. We know her mostly from Jurassic World. I have a confession. I have never seen Jurassic Park.
Any of them?
No.
Trash. They're pretty good.
I mean, I love Laura Dern. I love Sam O'Neill. I love Jeff Goldblum. Who doesn't? I just haven't seen it.
That's your next series.
Probably. And then, so she's in lots of stuff, Gold, Rocket Man. And then obviously the next film is Jurassic World Dominion. And then finally, Jessica Chastain as Celia Foote. We know her from Zero Dark 30, which was amazing. Molly's Game, Interstellar. And most recently she plays Tammy Faye in The Eyes of Tammy Faye. You and I are going to love this movie.
Oh, we're so going to do that one.
We are going to do this movie. So for those of you who don't know, the Tammy Faye
Shut
story.
Shut the fuck up. Tammy motherfucking Faye?
Tammy Faye. Tell everyone who she God. Is.
She is this like, she is literally like a queer gay icon. Because she was this, her and her husband were these insane
televangelists,
evangelical televangelists, and she would have the most makeup on, like layers of makeup, and like
cake lash, it on.
Like you know the girls with like the extensions,
yeah,
the lashes. Like she was the original.
You bet.
And so there's just like these beautiful, like there's these scenes where she would cry and the makeup was running, and she would wear like bright blue eyeshadow.
Oh, good
and
God! Pink.
But she eventually divorced her husband, but she becomes this gay icon because of literally because of how she looked, because of her makeup, and because of the drama. I mean, this, of course, they were like stealing money and embezzling and all
that. Well, and obviously her values are completely misaligned with those of like the LGBTQ plus community, but
the funny, it was, we love her,
but we, yeah. So she's playing that, which I'm really excited about because she's a really good actress. So as far as awards and nominations, okay. The Help was nominated for Best Picture, Best Performance by an Actress in a Leading Role for Viola Davis, Best Actress in a Supporting Role for Jessica Chastain, and Best Actress in a Supporting Role for Octavia Spencer. And the only win was Octavia Spencer, which was great. I was really excited to see that. At the time, I remember watching that and being excited. So just to kind of, I love this part. So Viola Davis was up against, for her nomination, Glenn Close for Albert Nobbs, Rooney Mara for The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Oh.
Meryl Streep for The Iron Lady.
Oh, God.
Duh. And then Michelle Williams for My Week with Marilyn. And obviously, that was Meryl Streep's. Meryl Streep. I wish that was her name. Meryl Streep's third Oscar ever, because she's been nominated a zillion million times and she's won three.
Yeah.
At that time. So Jessica Chastain and Octavia Spencer were up against Bernice Bejo for The Artist, Melissa McCarthy for Bridesmaids, and Janet McTeer for Albert Nobbs. Best Picture that year, because there's so many flipping movies in that category now. The Artist, which won?
Yeah.
The Descendants. I liked that movie.
Is that the one with George Clooney?
Yeah, I liked it. That's all right. Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close. The Help, Hugo, Midnight in Paris. Fuck you, Woody Allen. Moneyball. The Tree of Life and War Horse.
I like The Tree of Life.
Yeah, it was interesting, but it's you know, that was quite a big variety of things in there, but ultimately The Artist did win. So I feel like I want you to lead this conversation on the controversy, but if I may, an interesting article that I read about the white savior complex, right? So just to kind of, we kind of alluded to this at the beginning that, yes, this film was from 2011, but it was kind of, quote unquote, relevant. So an Insider article from June 2020, so last summer, the headline was, "The Help is trending on Netflix, and it's the worst type of white savior movie Americans could watch right now." So at that time, it's the fifth most watched movie on Netflix. And so we're thinking about June 2020, the Black Lives Matter movement, and now people, white people, are looking to this film as some sort of, I should watch this for some sort of education, right? And so this article is talking about the danger of that. And the big critiques, of course, from this article for the movie were like, a white author should not be telling the stories of Black women and then profiting off of that. And then softening segregation to make white audiences more comfortable, and just the overall benefit that a white woman has on telling these stories, right? So that was the article I was reading, and I definitely agreed with all of it. It was just interesting because I'm thinking, okay, 10 years ago, you know, we're 19, 20 years old. I'm watching this movie. I'm thinking, wow, this is so good. And it wasn't uncomfortable at all, which is the point that this article is making, right? So what do you feel like that controversy, is that the height for you, or like, why do you hate this movie? I guess is my question. Cause I know that there's multiple controversies, but the one I'm most familiar with is what I'm saying is that white savior complex in this film.
Right. I think that is very true. I think why I hate this film. I think this film is, I'm going to try a different approach cause I was really rough on Lady Bird and I don't think I got my point across.
Wait, do you dislike this film or do you hate this film?
Let me explain it this way.
Okay,
you can determine.
Okay.
I think this is technically a good film.
Okay.
It delivers what it was said it was going to deliver.
I see.
What I mean? Like, you order Domino's, you got Domino's.
Yeah, got it.
There is a
good way to put it.
It's a phenomenal cast. Like, you can't great go cast. Wrong with this cast. Like, either everyone in that movie was already famous or literally became famous
right.
because of the movie.
Right.
I really, let me see. I have a list of kind of things that I really enjoy.
Ooh, yes.
Of course, like Viola Davis and Octavia Spencer are kind of, well, it's really the first time we really see them on screen and shine.
Yeah.
And so they were both phenomenal. I felt like there was good moments of like true relationships on there. It's a celebration of Black women and more importantly, domestic workers, which is super important when we talk about the civil rights movement, because I think they were the unsung heroes. Mm-hmm. And really for most Black families, somebody in your family was a domestic worker. Like you would be shocked if you didn't know someone who was a maid or was a housekeeper or a cook or chef. Yeah, the acting was really straightforward. And I love that there was good potential. It's good potential to have a really great conversation. It just, like, I think the same criticism that I have the book, it just sanitizes a really important conversation around race and class in our society.
Yeah, yeah, true.
And so it just, to tell the stories, like the article says, about, I'm maybe weird. I don't always have the hardest time when it comes to like telling stories, white people telling stories about Black people. If I was a writer, I would write stories about white people sometimes. It's just life, you know what I mean? But I think the issue I had, oh my God, I'm choking and dying, is that it wasn't centered around Black women.
Right.
It was centered around fucking ugly ass Emma Stone in that terrible wig.
Oh,
that
my.
Wig was awful. That was the real travesty of this movie.
Was
that mop on her head. And I was like, her mother had a wardrobe full of wigs, finest wigs, probably in Jackson, Mississippi. And she had that mop on her head. No wonder why Stuart dropped you like a sack of potatoes.
She dropped Stuart, first of all.
No, Stuart dropped her. No, I just think like it was just a disservice. And like everyone, you know, a lot of critics, I was watching some YouTube reviews and reading some comments. And they were like, excuse me. They were like, well, it was being narrated by Abilene. I'm like, no, it wasn't.
Not really.
It might have been narrated. She might have been the voiceover might have been her. The reality is like we got to see the arc all revolved around Skeeter.
Skeeter.
And she fell in love, and she's in a love story. And like, why was that necessary? Oh, yeah, that's right. Because, like, the only way we can tell stories about Black people is through the lens of a white person.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's not even so much that, like, white people weren't there to, like, assist. They weren't allies in the civil rights movement. Of course there were. But it's always when we tell these kind of stories, you have to have a white person in the forefront. For you to, it feels like, I won't say that's, that may not be the truth. You can say it's the truth. I'm just going to say it may not be the truth.
Okay.
But it feels like the blind side. You have the white mom.
Yeah.
Dancing with Wolves.
Yeah.
But even recently, the Green Book, you have this white character in the forefront in order for you to like, so they can open the door and you can be like, oh my God, look at this. And especially, I think, relating back to the controversy that we have today, you know what I mean? Like why, it's easy to consume. Like we have to tell these stories so they're easily consumed for people can feel good at the end.
Yes.
You know, and I think that was my biggest problem, especially when you look at Hilly. I do appreciate that the white women were the villains in this movie. And not just not so much just like they were mean, but like they were bad moms.
They were shit moms.
Yeah. And I think this is these type of women, again, linking it back to classism, these aren't like, and we can talk about this when we get to Jessica Chastain's character. But like, these weren't just like middle-class white women. These were pretty well-off white women.
Yeah, they were.
You know what I mean? In order to have a maid and keep a household and add extension chairs, your husband was making some good buckaroos.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean? And so like, for them to like not care about their children and just have these babies as more like trophies, and you literally have like these Black women raising, you know what I mean, these children, it was just a good opportunity to talk about like, the class difference. And then you have this Jessica Chastain character. What's her name?
Celia.
Celia character, who is this, like, literally, Minnie calls her white trash. She's like, she can't get into this club. She can't get into this bridge group because they're like, oh, no, she's like, they stole one of the girls' man. No, it's because you're white trash. You're from the wrong side of the street.
Right.
But this oh my God, what's her name? I'm so terrible with names.
Celia?
Celia, gosh.
You're like a goldfish.
The Celia character, you know what I mean, has no problem with hiring a maid.
Yeah.
She like, economically, almost equal footing with the woman she hired. And because she married this richer man, all of a sudden now she can
Johnny.
Marry Johnny. She can marry this man. She has no problem. You know what I mean? There's no discussion of like, you were just at the bottom with this woman. And now you have no problem because you get a little bit of money to be like, well, I can hire you as a maid.
Right.
You know what I mean? So there's so many opportunities where like that we miss the point because we were focused. Our attention was on Emma Stone, the whole movie.
Right.
And we didn't get to really see these characters. When I mean these characters, I mean the maids in the movie, like grow and stretch.
And have an arc.
Right. You know, I mean, we don't know by the end of the movie, you know, they publish this collection of stories.
Right.
You know, we don't, Abilene.
That ultimately gets Skeeter where she wants to be in New York.
Yeah. And Abilene where? Where's
Abilene? Right where she's at.
She quits her job. She walks off to the sunset. You know what I mean? Like Minnie is still a maid to Sicily or Cilia or whatever.
You're doing so good. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like these women who sacrifice, that's the other part that pisses me off. Sorry, I'm getting a little angry.
No, do it. Get after it.
What did Skeeter get at the end of the movie? What did Skeeter lose? What was the risk? Well, the risk was, you know what I mean? Oh, she would ruin her family's reputation. She didn't give a fuck about her family. She lost her boyfriend. Great.
Big old deal.
Stewart didn't want you in the first place. You know what I mean? She gets the job she wants. She gets to move to New York. She becomes a successful writer. She gets everything. These women, literally, the stakes were so high. And I think that's the problem. These women could have lost their lives.
Yeah.
And the writing in the movie and the book don't perpetuate that hard enough. Like, there's slight scenes where you can see it and you can get that sense. But there isn't the sense of, like, Minnie giving that, feeding
Hilly
a fucking shit pie would have got her lynch.
Right.
But the conversation is like, oh my God, it's so funny because she's eating her shit pie. No, in real life, this woman would, Emmett Till died for less. You know what I mean? And so there isn't this realization, this gravity that these choices that these women are making, the sacrifices these women are making are life and death. They're fighting for their livelihood. And then when the book is finally published, it's not like it shifts the town. It's not becomes like, no, it's town gossip. People are laughing at it. People are reading in the grocery store and calling each other like, did you read this part? I wonder who this is about. And again, it's because it's about this upper crest. It's not tangible to everybody. So it's not this, doesn't trickle down and affects everybody.
Yeah.
So the structure still stays the same. You still have these black women making less than a dollar an hour. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Sacrificing everything to gain what? Nothing.
Right.
A signed book by their church, which was a lovely gift, but it wasn't enough.
Who gives a shit?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. That's honestly, I couldn't agree more. And that's a really powerful way that you put it. Like another thing that one of the articles I read said was just like this white savior complex is painting the narrative that a white person has to solve the problems for a person of color that they cannot for some reason solve themselves, which is stupid. That's a shitty narrative, but it's one that's painted all the time.
Yeah. It's painted.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, it's like, I will save you. I can do this for you because you can't. And it's bullshit. And so, you know, when I was 19 and watching this, like I mentioned earlier, like I definitely fell into this, like, wow, what an inspiring film, you know? And then knowing what I know now and reflecting on and learning more about these kinds of issues, and I still have so much to learn. But then, you reflect and you're like, oh shit. Like, and it's the same with The Blind Side. Like you said, that's a movie when it came out. I was like, amazing, how nice, you know? And then because everyone's comfy and happy and it ends and there's some tears shed and you're like, wow, kumbaya, this is so great. Yeah. But it misses the mark completely for what we're talking about, for what we really should be talking about, I should say.
Yeah, I have an even bigger issue with it because there's like, The ways that this movie could have been good, like, you know, if you think about it, one way is to invert this kind of white savior complex and like actually have the black characters force the white character to reckon with their own racism.
Yeah.
Like they made Emma Stone's character, Skeeter, exceptional. Like one thing they did was like they made her like too modern. Like she felt like a girl to a woman today and not a woman back then. Like she grew up in Jackson, Mississippi. First of all, her accent was terrible. As bad as that wig.
I don't think, did she even try to do
She tried and she failed.
Because Allison Janney's was
perfection.
Get your raggedy ass off my porch.
Yeah.
Please.
Perfection.
Can I make that my ringtone?
Perfection.
Yes, perfection.
So.
Love it.
So she graduates from Ole Miss in the 60s. Do you really think she was just a liberal a liberal woman of the modern age? No. She grew up at Upper Crest on a fucking plantation. Do you really think, you know what I mean? So there, she would have, even if she was more enlightened or got to heard some sermons or read some Martin Luther King or was involved in, like, she would still hold. I would, in my heart, I'm like, there's still most likely would be some racist tendencies, some of backwards course. Thinking. Where was this moment of her, like, you know, them calling her out?
Yeah.
And a perfect opportunity would have been to talk about Constance, her maid. You know what I mean? The movie really paints
Oh,
her.
Not Constantine. Or is it Constantine?
It's Constantine. Oh, okay. I said Constance. Constantine. Her maid, played by Cicely Tyson. Mm-hmm. One big problem I had with that, like, you have one of the best black actresses on film.
On planet Earth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Credible actress. And you use her as this, like, magical Negro, like, fairy who's like, clap your hands if you believe. And, like, she comes in and, like, say to her, like, you're a beautiful girl. It's okay you didn't go to the dance. This girl doesn't know anything about her life. Right. You know what I mean? And so she's running around trying to find Constantine, like, comes to find out her mom fired her because of some bullshit reason. She moves back up north. She's an old woman. She dies with her daughter in Chicago. And, you know, Skeeter doesn't know because they didn't want to upset her. You know what I mean? I'm like, but in my head, I'm like, Skeeter, you don't know because you don't care about this woman. You know what I mean? You care about this woman as who she was as your...
To you. Right.
Exactly.
But right.
You barely... And it's the same thing that I had with the author, Catherine Stalker. Like, you did not know your maid. You knew the maid in the context of your home, when she fed you, when she picked you up, when she... That's it. But if you didn't know this woman, who her family was, who her children were, what was her favorite music, what was her favorite food, what made her laugh, what made her cry, who she was as a woman, you did not care about her. Right. And I think that's the most incredible part and the missed opportunity is, like, you have... Segregation is so interesting. I was reading, you know, an article, or I was watching a YouTube video about, like, segregation and the concept of this movie and how it was about, it was, you know, laws, bylaws, whatever, societal rules, norms, whatever. But it was also so much about intimacy and sex, importantly, intimacy. You know what I mean? It was all about keeping the races different because you didn't want to know the races.
To mix.
Yeah, you didn't want to mix. But it was also these intimacy, but if you... And I love the fact that they use the bathroom. At first, I was hating it. I was like, fuck the bathroom. These women are making $1 an hour. Get these women money. But the bathroom was this, like, ambiguous, I'm using air quotes, apolitical moment where you could see how fucking absurd segregation was, right? So you can't have this woman shit on your toilet. The most mundane thing in the world. I love to take a poo. But it's, like, so mundane. So mundane.
Yeah, everyone does it.
But this woman can literally take care of your child, feed her, wash her, raise her, read her, do your job.
Do your job as a mother.
The
most,
like, at that time, the biggest responsibility of a woman.
Right.
You're allowing some other woman to do.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Well, and based off of ridiculous claims that different diseases exist on races and all of those. And that's part of the movie, right? Yeah, and it's
And you could have it, but it's like, the fact that, like, it was a good opportunity. I don't think they exploited enough, like, how ridiculous these rules were.
Yeah.
And how, you know what I mean, they created these rules just to uphold the most ridiculous, absurd concepts.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's just like, I felt like there was just so many missed opportunities to speak to why, you know what I mean, segregation, Jim Crow was so ridiculous.
Well, and the article I was reading too kind of had, here's an alternative plot, right? Here are some alternative characters. Instead of Skeeter, what, you know, in this person's view, the writer of this article, what if it was a young black woman who was going to or graduated from an HBCU, Howard, Spelman, something like that, and then came back and told the stories of these maids, right?
Yeah.
Like, how much different it would be if the central character was a young black woman instead of a young white woman, right?
Yeah.
And so it's really interesting to see those and, like, you know, would it have had the same effect if that was the case? Would it have been as well received by primarily white audiences? You know, those types of questions, because it's no secret of, like, why this film was successful as it was. As you said at the beginning, like, it performed what it was set out to do.
To who it was supposed to be.
To who it was. Target audience. Exactly. Yeah,
it was made by a white person.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The director,
funny and white women specifically. This film is made for white women.
This woman is made for white women because they can see themselves in Skeeter. I think that's why they made her such a modern interpretation of like a woman today.
Right.
Because then you could absolve yourself from your sin and say like, oh, I'm a Skeeter. Or I'm like a Shirley. What's her name? Cicely?
Celia.
Celiax. I'm like a Celiax. I'm gassy. I'm like Celia. You know what I mean? Like, I'm a little ditzy. I'm a little more, but I have a heart of gold and I'm just misunderstood.
Well, and also the scene, of course, kind of like, so one of the supposed to be heartwarming kind of bonding scenes between Minnie Jackson and Celia is she doesn't know how to make fried chicken. And Minnie is like,
you're talking about the miscarriage. Ooh, I'm off.
Oh, no. Oh, and which is very sad. And, because that's a part of the movie, right? In Celia's story, she's tried so many times to have children and she's had several miscarriages and it's devastating and very sad. And Minnie takes care of her after she finds her in the bathroom one of these times. And, but the scene I'm talking about when they're in the kitchen, right? And like, she's teaching her how to make fried chicken and all this stuff. And so, cause she can't cook worth a damn, right? And so, there's this scene later that Celia makes this huge meal, right? All of the things, fried chicken, candy, like everything. And then makes it for Minnie. And Minnie, it's kind of the scene of like, Minnie, sit down and eat with us, you know? And then it's kind of this like, oh my gosh, this is so like crazy. The shoe is, you know, like how the tables have turned. And then when I watch it now, I'm like, what do you want, a fucking trophy? Like,
for being,
being a good person.
For what?
For making.
For what? For putting that woman in the bed, doing your fucking job.
Yeah.
You really, you know what I mean? Like, being a good human, like, it's just pissed me off. And at the end of the day, sorry, let me back up a little bit. Okay. At the end of the day, that woman's still getting paid like maybe $5 an hour. I still can't use a fucking restroom in the same fucking grocery store. I can't go to the same restaurant.
So
I can't
even fucking boat.
So what the fucking point is?
Yes.
And we're supposed to sit there and be like, oh my God, and now everything's great.
But that is something that a white woman, you know, and me as like a 19-year-old, look at that and go like, wow, that's so heartwarming. And now knowing what I know now, it's like, what's the point? Like you just said.
Well, it's not even like, now knowing what you know now. No, that's the thing. We know what happens.
Right.
Those women still work. The rewards that those... The feelings that you are supposed to be feeling when you watch that movie of like, you know what I mean, togetherness, unity, doesn't happen for generations. It's not until those women's great granddaughter and some, you know, sometimes granddaughters, great granddaddaughters, great great granddaughters. A reason why I get so heated about this movie is because I am the production, I am the sacrifice of women like Abilene and Minnie. My great grandmother and my great grandmother, my great great grandfather, and my great 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 aunts, they moved here. They were sharecroppers from North Carolina. They come to Idaho and they were sharecroppers and they were maids.
Yeah.
And my great grandmother was a maid. She cleaned in the North End. She cleaned about the Warm Springs and she took care of people's children.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I am the result. Now, and I don't try to say like I'm an amazing dreamer or anything. When I see these movies, it frustrates me because at the end, white audience leave these movies and like, oh, when we made it. I'm like, 60-something years ago. And we're still fighting the same fights and still having the same arguments. And so like, it makes you feel good in the moment, but doesn't make you question and wonder like, why does this happen? And why do we still feel the repercussions of this? And how can we, you know, escalate and accelerate the progress more? No, it's just like, well, we did it. Don't have to worry about it anymore.
Yeah, like done deal. Like, I hope everyone's happy and comfy with this movie. Yeah, it's just, you're just assuaging. I mean, it's,
Yeah.
I mean,
I just... I don't know.
I get it. But no, I and I'm so excited because I know you didn't want to do this.
No, I still don't want to do this.
Well, we're almost done. But it's good. I mean, I think it's important for us to talk about films with these kinds of themes that kind of like that we, you know, like Lady Bird, we just disagreed on like how much we like the film. Right. But like big time. But like for these kind of films, I think it's important for us to dive into these films and like the controversies that surrounds these films that are like so loved by audiences to kind of poke the holes that need to be poked and say like, yeah, no, this completely missed the mark. You know what I mean?
I don't disagree, but it's still stupid.
Noted.
I had to watch this movie on like 1.5 speed just to like.
Did you like? Let's get this over with.
I was like, I have no interest in this film. Nothing interesting about it.
I know. Well, I know we have to wrap up, And I know this feels like a quick one because we just like got right into it. Let's tell our listeners, though, don't look to this film as an education into the racial reckoning in the United States. What instead should people be looking to?
Local Black Lives Matter.
Yeah. Okay.
Like I think that this is the hard part. I mean, like there are good movie. We could even debate about like Glory or Selma. I think those are good movies.
Yeah,
sure. I heard One Night in Miami might be a really good one.
I'm excited to see that. Yeah.
I think you can watch Malcolm X. There's tons of film. Bessie is a good, if you want a female driven kind of story about queerness. And I know I talk about the movie all the time, but it's a really great movie. Sure. Ma Rainey's Bottom. I mean, they're not going to give you, the thing about it is it's not going to give you the same satisfaction because it's not going to, as a white person, you will leave the film with more questions than answers.
Which is good.
Yeah, which is great. But people watch movies to escape. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like for a lot of times I can understand why watching those kind of movies are like, oh, God. It's because it's like W.E. Du Bois talks about double consciousness. So as a black person, I'm black, by the way. They're like, this is a really passionate white guy from Boise. My God, is girlfriend black? No. My boyfriend is. No, I mean,
Colin is in fact black. Yes. Yeah.
No.
That's so weird.
It's this really interesting moment where like double consciousness. So like I can see myself and see myself through the eyes of white people. You know what I mean? And so you only do that. You can only do that when you are a marginalized, oppressed group within society.
Sure.
You know? And so it's really weird to hear those kind of dualities at the same time when you watch a film. And so you're left with this like unresolved emotion and feeling because you're not absolved from your own sins. You know what I mean? It forces you to question and reckon with your own.
And be uncomfortable.
Yeah, with your own whiteness. Which, I mean, there isn't anything wrong with that. Sometimes your uncomfortability is like reflecting on the people around you, some of the decisions you make. There's nothing wrong with that. We all have had opportunities to oppress other people, to marginalize other people, to make life hard for other people. And that is okay. I think the more important things we need to resolve is how to be okay with those moments and how to ask for forgiveness.
Yeah.
And move past them.
Right. Right.
You know?
Absolutely.
But no, do not watch this movie. Read a book.
Read a book.
Watch a documentary.
Yes.
Watch interviews. I feel like Hollywood cinema is really piss poor when it comes to telling black history.
Yeah.
Because we treat it as alternative history.
Yes.
We do not treat it
as
watch Lincoln. No one has a problem watching Lincoln. And that's the thing. It's like, as a black person, I'm watching the clock because I'm about to go on a rant. As a black person, I have always been told I should be able to, you know what I mean, watch a movie about Abraham Lincoln or watch Lady Bird or watch any film, and I should be able to see myself. And I have learned how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I have learned how to see myself through a white person, Indian person, it's not taught the same way. Like, white people have to have, like, well, it's set in a mystical land, or it's in some far distance, or it's here's the white person to be to be your avatar through this story.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? And we can't just, for some reason, just like click, click, and like watch this movie and see yourself in it. Because we, you know, as a black person, I am equally a part of the American fabric. But the more we treat it as this alternative history that you need an avatar for a white person to understand, or for a white audience, or for white America. And white America, I mean the larger American, and that's including Asian people, Hispanic people. As a white majority nation, we have to have a white avatar for us to understand, like, oh my God, okay, now I get what they're going through.
Right.
And I'm like, no. As humans, we should be able to watch a story, put ourselves in our shoes. And if we can't, then we need to do the research in order so we can have that empathy. So I have a hard time with film telling black stories when it comes to like a historical period piece, which just was very much a period piece.
Yeah, yeah.
Unless it's about like, you know what I mean, Get On Up or Bessie, or you know what I mean, these.
Yeah, yeah.
Jackie
42, right?
Yeah,
Jackie Robinson.
About an individual, like an actual, but if it's like this, his.
I get it.
Retelling or.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I get what you're saying. Yeah.
It sucks.
It does. And historically, Hollywood has done as you said,
terrible job.
Piss poor job. Holy shit, man. Do you feel better?
No.
Oh. Worse.
I hate watching movies like this.
I'm sorry.
I'll be really honest. I don't like watching. I do not watch slave movies. When I was in like junior high school, they would force you to get like permission slip to watch.
Oh,
like,
shit. Yeah. I had one.
I was going to say Amadeus. to watch any like slave movie, like you, because it's fucking slavery, right? You don't want to traumatize children with it.
Yeah.
And so I wouldn't get my permission slip signed, so I would have to sit outside, and I would go get me a snack and
get you a Coke Zero and call it a day.
Like, I'm tired of watching black pain. It's black pain, and I'm constantly watching it. I'm like, I would rather see, you know what I mean, fucking Avatar. I'm talking about the blue people.
Yeah.
It's a terrible movie too, but like I wanted to escape.
And Christ, is it long? Oh, I mean, yeah. Who? James? Yeah, James?
James is wild.
You should have capped it at 2 hours, but my friend.
Yeah, but it's just like I want escapism.
Yeah,
I don't need to see it. I've seen enough. I love enough of it.
Well, the good news is you get to pick the next movie. So, thank God.
It might be Ma.
Oh shit! All right.
It might be Ma, because that's a good movie.
Well, I appreciate you sharing. And I'm sorry that, like, I'm sorry I made you watch it.
You're lucky to have these sweet onion chips. It was rough.
I'm like.
It was rough.
Well, God. I'm sorry you don't feel any better. You know, thank you for listening.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this I think this one was a little more serious, but, and that's fine in a good way. Because I wanted to talk about the...
Your dad's going to be like, this wasn't entertaining.
This is going to be everything Michael hoped for and more.
Michael.
I guarantee you.
Sorry for all the cussing, Michael.
He doesn't care, I assure you. But thanks for listening, and we're excited to see you next week. Again, if you have any films or actresses you want us to cover, let us know. We might be doing Ma next week. But either way, we hope you'll listen again.
Bye.
Hi, this is Aaron.
And this is Colin.
And you've been listening to
Let's Hear It for the Girls.
It's always a great time at Speak Studios in Boise, Idaho, and we hope you enjoy learning about the girls.
Now listen, you better like, subscribe, and review us on all major platforms. We'll see you next time.
And thanks for listening. We'll be right back.